This is FNX.
Listen to Shoot the Difference. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by Pitch DMM, the app that lets fans rate their own team's performance. I'm your host, Stel, and my co-host, as ever, is Mr. Yanakis J. How are you doing, young man?
I'm all right, man. I've got man flu, but apart from that, I'm all right.
Listen, I'm not trying to be funny, right? But all the time you see and hear about women saying, oh, you men, you always make a big deal about this whole man flu thing, and here you are, just, you know, reinforcing that stereotype. Grow some balls, for fuck's sake.
Absolutely, I'm just making their statements correct, that's all.
You know. Why, is it because your missus is next to you and she'll batter you?
Yeah, something like that. Can we move on now?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I was going to introduce Rodri, but I don't know where he is at the moment. He says he's busy doing something or other. Maybe he's at
probably in a party, mate.
Yeah, or maybe he's at the fish and chip shop. Yeah, that's a point, yeah. That's a point. So, yeah, shall we do some odds on whether Rod is eating a pie or fish and chips or... I don't know. Anyway, joining us tonight are three returning guests who host their own podcasts. Introducing first host of the Playmakers podcast, Connor Dunford. How are you doing, Connor?
Yeah, not bad, thanks. Cheers for having me back on. It's a pleasure to come back.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to have you on. And as a Southampton fan, I hope you enjoyed last week's show where we kind of compared Huddersfield to Shane Long.
I'll be honest, that's insulting to Huddersfield.
Say no more, mate. Say no more. It's great to have you on. Right, special guest number two is co-host of the D&D Footy Factory on Top FM. It's Double D. Welcome back, monsieur. Comment ça va?
Très bien.
And happy belated birthday.
Thank you very much.
24 again?
Still recovering.
Oh, boy, you don't sound like you've got a hangover.
Right. But still got to celebrate that. No, that's because I was tucking into some food, so that's kind of balanced me out a bit.
Ah, okay. What have you got?
Never drink on an empty stomach.
No, true. Got to seal it up, do you know what I mean?
good to be back on. It's always a laugh on you.
Great to have you on, mate. Great to have you on.
Great stuff, yeah.
And our third guest is co-host of the Three in Midfield podcast, Footy Says, and BBC Asia Network. Michael, otherwise known as Coach Kojo. Welcome back, my friend. How are you doing?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm delighted. I'm in a good mood.
You feel good.
I'm here, man. I'm here.
Of course. And it's great to have you here.
Thank you for having me again, man.
Excellent. Nice, an absolute pleasure. Before we continue, again, congratulations on your gig at the BBC. What was that like?
It was, you know, it was a lot more relaxed than I thought it would be, which is good because they make you feel comfortable, and they don't make you feel like, you know, you're coming to do something for the BBC. So there's a lot of pressure, kind of thing. It was just really fun, really enjoyable experience. And the great thing is they like to give opportunities to other people. So they've already told me. That they're going to try and get me back on. The woman that got me on called Huma, she gave me a call not long after I left saying, you know, how was it? And, you know, we're going to hound you and try and get you on again. So, you know, it's fun, man. It's fun. It was a great experience and something that I would do again in a heartbeat, and I'd recommend to everybody else.
So we're going to have to nickname you Mr. BBC from now on, yeah?
my mum calls me that already.
Oh, so. Nice. Nice. That's how you know. That's how you know you've done Mumsy proud. She's changed your name. See?
Yeah, it's true. Excellent. She's like, oh, you went for the BBC, Michael, Mr. BBC.
There we go. I heard that's what your girlfriend calls you also.
Oh my lord!
I was going to say this ain't that kind of show, but we've changed everything. So say what you want. Doesn't matter.
Sorry, this is meant to be a family show.
We've changed that now. Forget that.
can't be a family show. Stell's on.
Behave yourself. I know all about you. Don't worry. Right. Listen, those of you who've been listening to the show since its inception know that I feel a little bit uneasy discussing topics surrounding tragedies in the game. So I'll keep this as short as possible. Not because I don't think they aren't newsworthy, but I think they've been covered enough on other platforms. Plus, we don't know the full facts, so let's just leave it at that. But what I will say is, on behalf of everyone associated with the FNX Network, we offer our condolences to the families and friends of those involved in Saturday's helicopter crash and send all the well wishes we can to Glenn Hoddle, who I believe is back home now and he's chatting again, which is good. Now, I'm not sweeping these stories under the carpet. I just feel that it's too soon to be delving into something like this. I mean, some of us don't feel the need to be obituary ITKs, nor do we believe in making a name for ourselves off someone's misfortune. So, yeah, I'll just leave it at that, shall I? I think it's a bit fair, isn't it?
Well said, mate.
Thank you very much. I had other things to say, but I'm going to keep them to myself because it's a family show, apparently. So, yeah. Anyway, I think we'll kick off the show with our quiz. Let's do that because it's usually upbeat. And it's the quiz that has no name. And the reason why it has no name is because we couldn't think of a name. So we just called it the quiz that has no name.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Now, for those of you listening and those of you who haven't played before, Connor, I'm sure you've played when you've been listening to the podcast. I hope you have anyway.
Yeah, I get it wrong every time.
Okay, well, hopefully you do better in this one. Now, I've picked three games from past season, which happens to be 2014-2015. Okay. And I'm going to give you guys the results, and all you guys have to do, I'll give the answers being the players who scored the goals.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'll read you the results, and then at the end of the show, we'll go back to them, yeah?
Yeah.
So, season 2014-15, Manchester United 1, Chelsea 1. Oh, and Jan's going to go, 2014-15? Who was playing for United then?
Was that the season when we had that 1-0 loss at Stamford Bridge as well, when they had the ball for like, I don't know how long.
Yes. I think it was. Yeah, that was a Van Gaal season. That's what I'm saying.
Then I remember that season.
There you go.
Yeah,
right. I know the scorers.
Yeah, so do I. That right. Was...
okay, you don't have to...
No,
sorry.
Do it at the end, mate.
Okay. My bad.
Right.
I've played this before as well, sorry.
Right, the second game. West Ham 2... Man City 1, back when Man City didn't concede 2 goals in a game. Right, next game, Tottenham Hotspur 1, Newcastle United 2. I also have a bonus result, but I'm going to leave that to the end if the scores are even, which I hope they will be, because it makes it a bit more interesting, doesn't it?
Was that Tottenham Newcastle, you said?
Yes, sir. Spurs 1, Newcastle 2. Right. At Spurs the Chick 1, King Newcastle Arena. 2. Yes. I don't remember who was in charge of Newcastle. It might have been Pardew. May have been. I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, okay. Let's kick off the show. A game that just finished. Spurs lost to Manchester City at home at the NFL Arena. As it really cool. The state of that pitch. You know what? To be fair, lads, I watched as much of that game as I possibly could. After 15 minutes, I thought City were going to absolutely storm Spurs. Spurs had really nothing going forward. Sissoko, Lamella were dreadful. Lucas didn't get a kick, really. Sanchez was just passing the ball to Lloris and Alderweireld. Jan, you watched the game in full. What did you make of Spurs' performance? Let's talk about Spurs first.
I don't think Tottenham were at their best tonight. City controlled a lot of the possession. Were the better side of the night, deserved to win. Saying that, Lamella's chance right at the end is a gilt-edged chance, and he's got to take it and at least give Tottenham a point. I thought City were controlled, to be honest with you. I mean, you know, you can argue the pitch wasn't great, but the pitch was on both sides, so you can't use that as an excuse. But there was just too much quality on the City side, and like I said, they controlled the game. Sterling had a really good game. Fernandinho, I thought, bossed it in the middle of the park as well. I thought he was really good, just sitting in front of the back three or back four as City played, and. you know, and City kind of hardly gave a lot away. Like I said, it was only kind of a few chances Tottenham had in the whole game. Kane had one in the first half where if his touch is better, he's through on goal and maybe kind of dinks it over Ederson, but he doesn't. Ederson comes out and puts in like a good tackle. But Tottenham puffed and puffed, but City deserved to win.
Double D, I need to ask you this because it's been playing on my mind for the past few weeks. I really rate Fernandinho. I think what he does, he does the simple things. He's got an engine. He's strong. He's physical. Okay, Gary Neville says he's not good in the air, but that's by the by. Now, I know a lot of people are going to scoff at this, but when are we going to start saying he is just as important as how Makélélé was at Real Madrid? Because let's be honest, Real Madrid, did they win the Champions League with Makélélé in the team? I believe they did, didn't they?
Yeah, 2002.
So, are we saying that City have to win the Champions League for Fernandinho to be rated as high as Makélélé? Because let's be honest, he does a similar job and does it just as well.
Exactly. And he's definitely, unless you've got that eye, or you're a purist rather, he's definitely an underrated footballer. And the thing is as well is that back when he was at Shakhtar, he actually played further forward. So he kind of learnt that role a bit more, bit by bit, obviously, after coming to City. But he's a really good player. And as you said, he's just as important as the De Bruyne's and the Silvers of this world, because he is like, he's their deepest line midfielder, whatever team they play. Really, 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 really good player. It's only because of the fact that maybe the likes of Casemiro, etc., and Renato Augusto maybe get more goals, that he hasn't got more caps for Brazil. Fernandinho's quality bossed the game today. Tottenham were rather abject anyway, but they weren't allowed to pick up their game until late on, as Yannicky said, with the Lamella chance, for instance. Eriksen, Ali gave them a bit more. Ali was willing to try and take people on, but I don't know what it is this season. Tottenham are they don't seem to be quite all there, but this is the problem sometimes with stats, because this has been their best start before today. This was their best start to a Premier League season. But even Poch did a talk before the game, and he said that he's been his worst feeling since he's been at Tottenham, but yet it's been their best start to the season. So all doesn't seem right there. And with Son, Ali and Eriksen all on the bench, it's like as though it was a bit of self-sabotage on Poch as well. I'm not sure he wants to be there too much longer. And seeing as Lopetegui got sacked today, he might be lining himself up for a little move to Spain.
Could well be there, mate. Could be a very good shout. Kojo, you being the tactician that you are, did City do anything different than you expected? Because for me, it just seems that Guardiola now knows how to close games out when it's a low scoreline.
Yeah, no, they did what they like to do, which is keep the ball and just try and control the game as much as possible. Miles is very disappointed that Spurs were done by a long ball. That was pathetic defending, absolutely pathetic. And
here comes the coach.
Yeah. And, you know, apart from the Lamella chance, and actually Kane's one as well, because that was another long ball from Tottenham's side. And then, again, poor defending. And then he had one pass from Lamella straight to Kane. Lukaku touched, so he obviously didn't score. they did exactly what they do. I mean, that's the thing about City, is that if you allow them to keep the ball, they're gonna be very comfortable trying to score goals or trying to close the game out. They're very smart. The tactics are spot on. And actually, with Fernandinho, you guys talking about that, I'm not his biggest fan, but one thing I do like about him is that he's so tactically aware and he knows how to slow games down. Whether that would be in terms of the passing or whether it's just like disrupting the other team's tempo by conceding smart fouls just to make sure the game slows down a little bit. He's good at that kind of thing. So they were comfortable, man. And to Tottenham, I worry for Tottenham. I think they're going to finish outside the top four at this rate, only because I know it's early, but in terms of how they have operated so far, and the way they don't have to deal with that, the squad rotation. I mean, Kane's been tired for at least 6 months now, but he's still playing. And the lineup today was poor, in my opinion. So, really, City were comfortable. They had no problem.
Absolutely. And Connor, you know, Kojo mentioned Harry Kane. He only had really a half chance tonight, which is that poor touch, which Ederson sorted out. They really do need someone to give them that support. I know that, you know, Ali has been injured, Son's been out, as is Ericsson. But let's be 100% honest, mate. He needs possibly a strike partner to give him that kick up the arse.
Yeah, I think the problem they've got is where he's so key, so pivotal, they can't... He's almost irreplaceable for them, isn't he? I mean, who can you bring in that's going to do the job he does? Because the work he does off the ball is just as important as the work he does on the ball. Although not quite today. You know, they've got Llorente, but then you kind of look at the market and go, who's capable of filling those boots even 60-70% when he's out, that's willing to come and play second fiddle to him? And they're just not about, are they? They're just not. I think from a personal point of view, we signed Danny Ings from Liverpool, and he was probably a prime, could have been a prime target for them, because he would have been happy to play second fiddle to Kane, get the game time he can, and he's got a bit of quality about him, even a Sturridge from Liverpool, dare I say it. But I think that's the issue they've got, that no one's going to want to come into that team.
Oh, absolutely. Well, City's win puts them top of the league. They're now ahead of Liverpool on goal difference. I think they've got eight better when it comes to the goal difference. So they've scored seven more and conceded one less. And speaking of Liverpool, they made it 26 points out of a possible 30 with a rampant 4-1 victory over Cardiff. Klopp's men appeared... There you go. He started. Birthday boy. Relax. You need to relax. You need to relax. I can't keep having you on when you keep going on with Liverpool win. It's hurting my feelings. Well, Klopp's men appeared to be stuck in second gear before the introduction of Shaqiri. And once the Swiss international came on, Liverpool stepped into sixth, blitzing Neil Warnock's men with three goals in 20 minutes. Birthday boy, I doubt many Liverpool fans believe the Swiss international will get much game time, let alone change the scope of matches the way he's done as of late. Do you think Klopp is thinking about giving him a place in the starting lineup? And if so, where would he fit in?
This is the thing, still. Shaqiri, I was fully behind. I think he was absolute steal. And I'm just happy that he picked us over over your boys over at United, because he just brings something different to the team. He's willing to shoot from long range. He can pass the ball. He can beat a man. Good on set pieces. And it's actually worked out for him well that we weren't able to get Nabil Fekir from Lyon. And with the amount of chances that Arsenal concede, he could be very close to starting on Saturday, because... between the line, he just offers something different. We played him against in the Red Star game in Europe, and obviously because Fabinho provides such good protection for the back four, it allows the midfielders to be a bit more assertive in their approach. And we played a 4-2-3-1 in that game, so like Salah was the front man, but Salah never stays in the box anyway, goes out wide, kind of interchanges with Firmino, and that might just be the formation, because he's doing so well and impacting every time he comes off the bench that you have to look at it now that it's probably best to give him a couple more starts. But yeah, I fully wanted him. I think he's always been a quality player, regardless of being on the bench at Bayern and being sold by Inter. And you can't just discredit a player or think they're not good enough just because he went to go play at Stoke, because you saw that he would still press for them, he'd still score spectacular goals for them and win them some games by himself. And he's come in and he's settled really quickly, and it's a joy to see.
Absolutely. And Mo Salah, he's, people saying that he's out of form. I don't understand where they're getting this from at the moment. It confuses me. It really, really does. I mean, you know, 59 appearances, 39 goals for Liverpool. It's incredible how, you know, okay, and he had a great season last year, and he's only got 5 goals in the league this season, you know, 5 and 11, which really isn't bad, taking into consideration how many goals a certain Lukaku has scored this season.
I thought we were going to mention him today.
Well, yeah, take the L. Take the L, yeah. But Kojo, Liverpool have won all 19 home matches that Mane has scored in, mate. Salah started the headlines last season, but Mane has been absolutely superb since signing from Southampton. Do you think he gets enough credit?
I rate Mane over Salah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Go on.
Because... You said it right there in terms of the record, but in general, his overall play for me is better than Salah's overall play. Salah has had a phenomenal season and third so far, because he's a ruthless finisher. He's a goal scorer, 100%. But in terms of Liverpool's overall play, when you watch them play, you know, Salah doesn't obviously, for me, doesn't contribute too much in terms of the overall play of the team, because a lot goes through Mane, and Mane, his direct running, his off the ball movement, and just his impact in games is crazy. And this weekend was an example for me. You know, the way he fought back for the ball and licked it straight past the goalkeeper. I was like, yeah, this guy, he's pure evil, And you know, the funny thing about English football in general is, when Van Dijk was at Celtic, when he was being linked with English clubs, we're told he plays for Celtic, he can't do nothing here. And then when Mane was linked with Man United, I can speak for Man United fans, because Man United fans are like some of them are pure idiots. when we were linked with Mane, a lot of them were saying, what do you want Mane for? He plays for Southampton, blah, blah, blah. Doesn't matter who they play for. All it matters about is the quality that they bring towards the team. And that guy, for me, is the piece in the jigsaw of Liverpool's attack. And I said this last season, that if he got injured in the Champions League final and Salah didn't, I feel like Liverpool wouldn't have scored in that final. I feel like Mane is so, so dangerous and so, so good to watch. So, yeah, he's not respected enough. And it kind of annoys me, even though I hate the club, but it kind of annoys me. So, yeah, let's put more respect on his name, man. Like, he's a good footballer, very good footballer.
Absolutely. Wait, chicken boy, calm yourself down.
What do you mean, calm yourself down, brother?
But you hate the club. Let's not turn this into a Liverpool Man United war, brother. You get me? We'll get taken off the airwaves.
Listen, there's no war here. You're doing well, we're trash. It's okay.
One thing I'll add on Mane as well is, for me, watching him, I don't think he's actually improved that much since he left us, because he was doing all the same things at Southampton.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually scoring more goals, if anything, for Southampton, considering the kind of service he has. I think he's just he's a piece of a bigger jigsaw, isn't he? Now the spotlight's on him a bit more, so he's getting noticed. And I think, like you say, there was a bit of a noses turned up when he was linked to the bigger clubs. But when you call it, you call it, and it doesn't matter.
The thing is, when Liverpool signed Mane, the first thing I thought was, well, that was around about the time where Liverpool really struggled to kill off the lesser sides. Yeah. And he's the kind of player that you bring in, like United did with Berbatov. Berbatov wasn't brought in because Ferguson wanted a £30 million striker. He wanted someone that could score against your Boltons, your West Broms, because you were struggling to finish it. And Mane is doing exactly that. If Salah doesn't perform, or Firmino, then you best know that this guy's going to put in a performance. And speaking of Mane, his former club Southampton were held to a goalless draw by Newcastle, who had goalkeeper Dubravka to thank for keeping them in the game with a string of fine saves. Connor, your boys Southampton are without a win in six and haven't scored in the last five games. Are you more frustrated than concerned at the moment? It isn't as if Southampton aren't creating chances.
We're definitely frustrated and we're definitely concerned. Probably more concerned than frustrated. Ings is our top scorer at the moment. He's got four. And you've only got Højbjerg, Bertrand and Austin have actually scored from the squad. You know, Mark Hughes has come in. Came in March. Three league wins since he took over then. One at home. That was against Bournemouth last season. And away at Swansea, that one Gabbiadini kept us up. And then we beat Palace 2-0 this season at Palace. But as we all know, they're awful at home this season. You know, a few weeks ago, we had the third most shots behind City and Chelsea, but the second worst conversion rate, only better than Cardiff.
Mm.
And, you know, since that, there was two game weeks ago. So by now, we're probably still up there in terms of the shots, but we've probably got the worst conversion rate now. And, you know, you can't... That blame lies at the striker's feet, doesn't it? You can't... I'm not Hughes' biggest fan at all, but he's not the one with his boots on in the penalty area, is he? I'm very frustrated, very concerned, and I fear the worst for us. Both teams, actually, us and Newcastle.
Mm. What do you make of Mark Hughes then? Because I know Rodri isn't his biggest fan. He's made it blatantly obvious he doesn't like Mark Hughes. He's a typical 4-4-2 manager, isn't he? You know what you're going to get with Mark Hughes, and unless he's got big lumps like Adebayor or Roque Santa Cruz up front, you're not going to be very effective. For a former striker, he's a... selection up top seems to be a bit erratic.
Well, that's because he's got no idea who's his best strikers, and neither do we. We've got four. We've got Austin, Gabbiadini, Ings and Long. Now, Ings is definitely our best forward. He's probably our best player at the moment, up there with Højbjerg. Long can score if you gave him 18 open goals. He's
just, blimey.
He's just not a finisher at all. Gabbiadini is so desperate to score a goal that he just makes too many wrong decisions. And then the less I say about Austin, the better. Just Sunday League personified, that bloke. But yeah, I mean, Hughes, we brought in Hughes because we wanted better football. And we get more creative football. I wouldn't say it's better, we get more creative. But we're actually far worse off at this stage now than we were under Pellegrino. And results-based game, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I'd like to thank everyone in the Periscope listening live. Who would you bring in to replace Mark Hughes if he was to go? Because I think Claude Puel didn't do a bad job, did he, Connor?
He didn't do a bad job when you look at it from the outside in. But from the inside, it was dire. It was dreadful. It was boring. And we're not just Saints fans, and it's all over the Premier League, isn't it? I mean, as Man United fans, you're kind of suffering to a lesser extent the same thing. You want both. You want results and you want good football.
Would you have Lukaku up front, though?
Yeah. We've got Shane Long. for a club like us.
Connor, David Moyes is available.
I know. Yeah, I know. So is Alan Kirbishley.
Oh boy.
And Pardew, yeah, come on, let's just keep reeling them off. Allardyce, all of them. The old boys club, bring them all in. All in at the same time.
A conglomerate of shite managers. Yeah.
Let's get Harry Redknapp back. He'll do your taxes.
Oh, Harry Redknapp will never step foot into St Mary's ever again. Jesus Christ. Yeah, I don't know. If he goes, the thing is, the position we're in, we've got no one who we can bring. You're going to have to go risky, and you're going to have to probably go for a championship manager who's performing very well, or another random foreigner. Hope you pull out a Pochettino out of our arse again, which probably won't happen.
Fair point. Kojo, Bournemouth piled more misery and pressure on Jukanovic after they hammered Fulham 3-0 at Craven Cottage. More comical defending from Fulham, who couldn't cope with Eddie Howe's counter-attacking system. What's the biggest difference you've noticed in Bournemouth's approach this season, mate?
They're utilising their strike force a lot better now. Was it last season that Callum Wilson was injured for a lot of the season?
That's
was it
right.
last season?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can see how much they missed him up front. He is... I admire how much he's bounced back from his injury. He's looking as dangerous as he was before he got injured. And Josh King is having a time of his life as well. And the way he utilises Ryan Fraser, I think that he's a very underrated player. He's quite a good player, actually. I'm quite a fan of Ryan Fraser. You can just see how they've got a system... And they stick to the system. But the thing they do is also is that defensively as a team, as a unit, not just the back four, the way they defend as a squad is very good. And then they use every moment they get when they steal the ball to break and just break, use their pace. Because a lot of defenders in the Premier League, one, can't deal with pace, and two, just can't defend. So they just go direct. And Fulham suffered big time. But then who's surprised about Fulham? Because I didn't know this. Last season in the Championship, they were in the bottom half for quite a long time, weren't they? They were bottom. And then they suddenly shot up and then they went and got promoted. And someone, a Fulham fan, said that, you know, maybe they can do that this year, but that's levels between the Championship and the Premier League. There's still big levels out here. And Fulham are not levels. So what Bournemouth did didn't surprise me, but Bournemouth are looking... They're looking really exciting going forward. They know how to use the pace, and their decision making is on point right now. So they have to try and continue to do that, because this is the first time in, I think, since they got promoted, really, that I've been impressed by how Howe has utilized the team going forward. Like, this is the first time in a long time I've looked at him and said, okay, now I understand why people are getting excited about you. Because before, I got it, but I didn't really buy it. And then you had a weird run, but now you're starting to do things again. So it's impressive.
That's right. Now, Rodri isn't here to answer this question as a proud Welshman, so I'm going to put it to all of you guys. Now, David Brooks has scored 3 goals in his last 4 games. Now, when Bournemouth signed him from Sheffield United, Eddie Howe actually said, "We've seen enough to suggest he could be outstanding at this level." He's already starting to prove his boss right, isn't he? Who knows much about this lad?
Didn't know much until they signed him, to be honest. Sheffield United were not a team I looked out for when I did watch a Championship game. But no, he's actually got tickers. Like, that first goal he scored when they were at home to Palace, the way that he hit the ball to generate that much power with a side foot, I thought, okay, he's got a little something about him. Decent with both feet, can run with the ball, looks for the pass and then repost to make an angle to get the ball back. He's a good player, and I must say I've been impressed with the way him and Maddison over at Leicester have come from the Championship, and it's just been easy to take it to Premiership football like ducks to water. But Brooks looks decent, looks exciting player, looks like he's going to have an exciting future ahead of him.
And Weirdly enough, I think with Sheffield United, what happened was, I think he's been there for, I don't know how many years now, but last season, he only scored like 3 goals in general, and I think that's his overall tally for them. So the fact that he's scoring goals like this already means Eddie Howe's definitely seen something in him, and he's getting the best out of him already. So yeah, it only looks good for him going forward.
I think Eddie Howe knows what a player needs from the lower leagues, I think, because you look at their team, their squad as a whole, and how many players from League One and the Championship they've still got. But I think he's got that keen eye for the qualities to make it in the Premier League, because, like I said, their defence, Charlie Daniels, Adam Smith, Steve Cook, Simon Francis, all were in League One.
Yep. Yeah, it's true.
You've got Sermon, who was down there in the Championship in League One with them. Callum Wilson, he's been there and done it, and he kind of knows what you need to make that step up. So I'm assuming that's what he's seen in David Brooks. And like I said, that Crystal Palace goal, there's more to that than meets the eye, isn't there? The way he scored that.
The way he hit the ball, the follow through as well, it was crazy to generate that much power from what just looked like a basic side foot. But yeah, he can play. But as Michael was saying, Bournemouth, talking to them in general now, not just about Brooks, on the break, they are a very, very dangerous team. And they probably, outside of like the main team's top 6, play the most exciting football in the league, attacking football in the league. They all bombing on. They played a different formation as well on the weekend. They kind of played, Frazier was kind of like an inside forward. And they had like 4 across the midfield with Lerma and Lewis Cook, three at the back, and then Daniels as a wing back. Like, he's playing with different formations. I think it's only a matter of time before Howe gets a bigger job. I think what he did in his first season in the Premiership with them was so underrated, because half of their squad was injured and he still kept them up comfortably to a point where the last 4 or 5 games of the season they played a second string lineup because they'd been able to accumulate so many points. And I fully understand why he was being linked to the likes of Arsenal and for the England job as well. I think he's a really, really good manager that motivates his players well.
See, this is the thing. If he was to get a bigger job, which club would employ him? Now, the reason why I ask this is because it's all well and good, saying, he's a talented manager and whatnot, but we saw what happened with Brendan Rodgers. He went to Liverpool and they became the nearly men, didn't they? He's gone to Celtic and they're doing well in the SPL, but then when you look at their performances in Europe, they're absolutely shocking. Now, if Eddie Howe went to, say, an Everton, then what would he be expected to do? 7th place, if he's lucky?
I think that's the issue with the Premier League at the moment, isn't it? Unless you're a proven track record and you're going to get one of the top... Well, not even the top 6 anymore, because in reality, of those top 6, who's going to go for the Premier League title? 2, 3 at the max. So he's probably got... next step's probably international football, isn't it? After Bournemouth. Or abroad, but how often do English managers go abroad?
Yep, that's a point. That's a very good point. Yep. Right, Sunday's mid-table clash saw wasteful upfront Everton travel to can't keep a clean sheet Man United. Goals from Pogba and Martial gave United the points, but it was far from plain sailing as Everton were, wait for it, wasteful up front. Jan, I don't know if Manflu has got the better of you yet, but Jose Mourinho dropped Lukaku, but his name is Romelu Lukerbfoot. dropped into the bench, playing Rashford as the central striker with Mata out wide, and Fred with some sort of free roll in the middle of the park, and it paid off. Granted, United were OP again at the back, but it was good to see a nice display of football overall. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do agree. I think it was a lot better. It wasn't a surprise that Lukaku wasn't in the team and United played a lot better, to be fair. Lukaku plays football the way I dance, which is awful, to be honest.
I've seen you dancing, honestly.
Yeah, I know. I'm awful, ain't I? It was good still.
You've heard of the film White Man Can't Jump. Jan can't dance, honestly. I know. Like Michael Jackson with no legs.
And I'm right-footed. Anyway, back to the game. It's not a coincidence that since Mata's been in the team, United have been playing a lot better. The fact that Mata gives United a lot of stability, a lot of quality on the ball, allows the wide men to get into spaces, and Mata kind of finds them. So I quite like Mata in the team. And with Rashford, all right, Rashford hasn't got the physical presence of Lukaku, but he doesn't even use that. But what Rashford does, he makes intelligent runs in the channels, which allows United to push on and get the team forward. And yeah, there was a patch, there was some good football. United should have took more of their chances and make it more comfortable. And you saw once the penalty went in, it was a totally different game. Everton had belief that they would get back in the game, and you know, you never know what can happen. But overall, I think United deserve to win on the day.
And Kojo, you and I, we seem to be the only people that see eye to eye when it comes to Paul Pogba, and Jan included, obviously. But his showboating and Smalling's right on cue brain lapse made it a nervy end to the game. To be fair, Pogba knew he made a mistake, but do you think he'll learn from it?
Yeah, I think he's starting to understand it. He said after the game that sometimes he realises that, you know, sometimes it's better to just get the ball out of there and then try and regroup or try and move the ball to get the team forward a little bit. It's not always, you know, try and play the way that looks pretty. Sometimes just get out of there and let's get going again. So it was good that he recognised his mistake, and I think he's so desperate to be a leader in the dressing room that I think he's starting to realise his own game faults. And so I said, okay, I have to do this and do this better, because that's 2 weeks. The first one was Chelsea with the Mark and Rudiger, and then now you got this one again, giving the ball away before. You know, I'm not going to talk about Smalling because I'll get mad. But yeah, you can see that he's starting to acknowledge the things that he's doing wrong, and that's only going to help him in the long run. Because if you can see that from now, and you start to slowly get out, and then let your quality come out and show on the pitch, no one's going to have anything to complain about anymore. I mean, didn't Graham Souness go to praise him at half time, and everyone was like, wait, what? Like, everyone was rattled. So even though I feel like they were buying into that a little bit, but you know, he can change opinions on him that people have of this showboating, it's all about me kind of player. I think he really does care about winning with the team, but it starts with getting these small things out and then acknowledging that, yeah, I need to do better in this situation for the team to get better.
Kojo, can I add something on Pogba, if I may?
Yeah, go on.
I feel sometimes, because of the lack of movement up front, he tends to do things by himself because there's nothing in front of him for him to pass. Sometimes I look at him and he's looking forward, and there isn't an option. So in the end, he tries something fancy, he tries something difficult because he hasn't got the movement up front for him to pass the ball to.
I agree. I agree so much because there's a guy up front that is...
What, that boy that cost 90 million quid?
Rock Nation, baby.
You see that guy? You see that guy? You know what? If I get onto him right now, let's listen to my podcast on Tuesday. I'll deal with him there, because right now, I've had a good day, you know. I really don't have the energy for him right now. I really don't.
If you want someone to share your rant with, let me know as well, because I'll be happy to talk about him too.
Let's do that.
See. But just before we move on, Yannick, you hit the nail on the head in regards to that Pogba thing, because obviously even the latest example, if you go earlier on in the season, when you lost at home to Tottenham, there was that bit over by the touchline, wasn't it, when he got the ball, shielded it, looked up, no one was making any runs.
That's right.
I ended up just rolling the ball out of play, because it was like, there's no movements for me. There's nobody there. I can't do it by myself because they trapped me. There's two people here. I've got no one to pass it to. And you just pass the ball out of play. It was like, forget.
I watched him a lot. He gets frustrated a lot. And I actually agree with Pogba. I mean, I know sometimes, you know, everyone's going to look at Pogba because of the price tag and his hair and all that.
Yeah.
He's actually a really good footballer. And if you give him intelligent and good players around him, he's going to become better. But he's not doing that at United because the players around him are not good enough.
Most people believe you shouldn't have a Harley Davidson in your apartment.
What the hell is going on here? Sorry.
Hey, Roger.
Apparently I shouldn't have a Harley Davidson in my room. I don't know what's going on there, but yeah. Just random pop-ups. So I don't know why I would have a Harley Davidson in my room. Sorry, guys. Anyway. Yeah, sorry. So, look, I think... It goes back to what Kojo said about Pogba wanting to be a leader. I heard something or other where Pogba spoke to Jose Mourinho at halftime against Newcastle, and Jose said, "How am I going to get the best out of you in this game?" And he actually said to him, "Well, let me drop deep and play in front of the back four and play Fellaini further forward." Mm. And it worked. You know, I'm not saying that Pogba masterminded United's comeback, but you know, he's showing signs that he's taking things more serious than what it was before. I think he's finally getting it.
And Martial's another one as well, still, isn't he?
Yep.
They're starting to, I think, their attitude in the last 2-3 weeks has improved a lot. I mean, we as United fans have criticised them too, especially for, you know, maybe being bad eggs in the dressing room or being disruptive. But I think with Luke Shaw, I think, staying, and now these two, it seems like, actually, Mourinho was probably right with everything that he was saying. And let's face it, if Pogba and Martial are playing well every week, the manager's not going to come out and criticise, is he? The reason why Martial now is starting regularly is because he's playing well and scoring goals.
Mm.
You're not going to criticise a player for having a good game, are you? And let's face it, Martial for the last, what, year and a half has been so inconsistent, Mourinho's had a right to have a go at him. So I don't blame the manager at all.
Fair enough.
Connor, while we're on the subject of Pogba, what do you make of his penalty technique? I'm not quite sure what he's trying to achieve.
He's literally just said he's starting to take things more seriously. but I mean, it sums him up, doesn't it? He can't be straightforward because he had a pretty good game. Like you said, he even impressed Graham Souness, which was a shock to everyone. But I mean, all of that could have just been ruined if it weren't. For that stroke of luck with the ball bouncing back at his feet. And I mean, I'm not being funny, but I don't see Jordan Pickford as one of them, as the type of keeper you can psych out. He comes across as quite a confident, resolute guy, doesn't he?
Yeah.
To try that against, I mean, any keeper in the world, you're a brave, brave man, but against someone, probably him, that's bordering stupid, isn't it?
Well, he's done it for years, though, Connor. That's been his style of penalty taking for years.
Was ridiculous, though. That was taking it to the extreme.
Running up like he's flipping James Anderson, bruv. You just knew that he was going to miss because Pickford's always been good at saving penalties since he's been a teenager for England's under-19s or under-20s, whatever it was. You just knew that he was going to miss. I was so annoyed he got the rebound because I wanted him to take people to throw shade at him. Like, oh, terrible. Terrible. Even his one he scored on the opening day against Leicester, it was a terrible penalty. But Schmeichel could only kind of get a hand to it and went to the roof of the goal. And to get him off penalties immediately, especially when Matter's on the pitch, Matter will just run up and smash it in with his left foot for me. So this nonsense, man.
Mm. He did the same at Young Boys away. Same technique and keeper should have saved that as well.
Well, the funny thing is, you mentioned Jordan Pickford. He reminds me of this this typical like Chumbawamba tub thumping kind of person. You know, he'll drink about four pints before the game. He'll have six Red Bulls, like Joe Hart used to. You know, Joe Hart used to be so pumped before games, like headbutting the wall and all that kind of stuff, and G-ing everyone on. It's like the England goalkeeper's shirt.
Do you remember in the 2014 World Cup when Italy and England, when the ball boy wouldn't give the ball back to
yes. It's like the England goalkeeper shirt is like a wife beater, isn't it? Don't need to wear a vest, just wear that England shirt and you know. Yeah, typical. I'm going to go shopping wearing my England goalkeeper shirt. One of those you see in Lakeside. Anyway, Mr. Birthday Boy, again, I can't help but think that something is really missing for Everton to be considered a top seven side. I mean, they remind me a little of my school report card. Works hard, puts in a lot of effort, lacks focus. Is that a fair evaluation of Everton so far?
Yep, I think that's bang on. Everton... we can always rely on Richard Keys to tweet something from the Bein Sports Studio.
Oh, Mr. Morals here. About how Mr. Golden Rule.
Everton have made really good signings. I think they're going to come over Liverpool this season. It's like a recurring tweet, but like an automated system.
They're going to do what to Liverpool? They're going to do what to Liverpool, Mr. Sender Ross? What are they going to do to Liverpool?
Oh, man. But yeah, I don't know, words can't describe really. They're not very good at the back. They're trying, at least now I suppose they're playing a more attractive brand of football. Pickford is a decent keeper, but I still think that he's got a bit of a baby Loris at times and run out of the goal when not needed or try and run dribble with it or just do something random. I just don't know, because when you look at their squad, it's actually a decent squad, but again, it's goals. Richarlison started like a house on fire. He's cooled off a bit now. Jake Tosan was very good last season, not so this season. Calvert-Lewin's a willing runner, but he's not really the finisher. And I just think that they'll be in a lot of games, but I just think that extra bit of quality isn't there. But seventh place is open. Let's be realistic. Regardless of how badly United are doing now, they will get into the top six. Seventh is open, and that we spoke about Bournemouth earlier. It could be them if they can continue to take points off of the teams that'll be in and around them, because I just think their open style, they'll be unlocked in big games. But yeah, I just don't know with Everton. Like, when you expect something from them, they don't produce, but then they'll have a game that, even the other day, Pickford saved a penalty last week when they played Palace. It was a pretty even game. They came away and then won the game in the end, but I don't think they'll have enough at the back to keep them in enough games. So they'll probably be looking more maybe about an 8th or 9th.
Well, see, this is the thing. When you look at their back four, Dinho is a half-decent left-back, and obviously he's done well to dislodge Leighton Baines, who kind of monopolised that position. Then you've got the right-back, Seamus Coleman, that's come back from a really serious injury, and you can see he's still suffering a little bit, not from the injury, but maybe a lack of form, ring rust, whatever.
Yeah, because these games were all about bursting forward, wasn't it? Yeah. Just being a bit more cautious in terms of...
And then you've got the central defenders, Zouma and Keane. I tweeted it yesterday. They're like a patchwork central defensive partnership. I mean, can't you expect Harry Redknapp to go in the market and bring them in like Ricardo Rocha and you know all these other players? Let's just look at them like, are you serious? Are you for real? I mean, I know Jagielka is, well, I don't know what's going on with Jagielka. Is he injured? I don't even know. And they had Williams, and Williams is out on loan. Yeah, Jagielka, yeah. Watch DVDs of him, Rio. He'll teach you how to defend. But, yeah. But, yeah, let's move on from Everton because, yeah, the Toffees, sticky situation, all that. Right.
Boom.
They've
got Yerry Mina as well, haven't they, still?
Yeah, play him.
Speaking up front, fuck it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
He's got... Zouma reminds me of... Bruno Martins Indy.
Oof.
You know,
Martins Indy is a mess.
Yeah, he's a big mess. And you know what? People rated him because they like defenders that look scary. I remember there was a picture one time inside his face.
No, but do you remember, Mike? You spoke about it when we did our World Cup show with Still a couple months ago. He was brilliant in that game when Holland beat Spain 5-1. So oh, yeah. everyone thought he was going to be better. And after that, it was just like, when you actually watched him, it was like, this guy is really bad.
Exactly. They thought he was going to be something special, but that's just like for manager fans, you know what I mean?
Zuma's in the Mangala mode.
Mangala's another bad one. Jesus Christ.
Is Mina any better though? Is Mina really Mina, that good? Mina,
there you go, Connor, because I only think Yerry Mina's good in the air. When he was at Barcelona last season, he was getting twist and turn left, right, and centre. He's brilliant in the air though. He'll header a brick rate.
In the air, it's fantastic, but on the ground, I can't wait to watch that, trust me.
On the plus side, Everton can have Lukaku back if they want.
I will pay for his ticket to get there. I don't even live near him, it's fine. I'll find him, we'll get there together.
will you pay for your Timberland boots as well?
I'll pay for the jeans, everything. Everything.
I go house with you, mate, alright? Don't worry.
I got this, man. Buy me a drink at the.
All right, you're on. All right, as long as it leaves. No
yeah, this is a personal vendetta, bro.
No problem.
This.
Don't think we're gonna hear the end of this, are we? Until Lukaku actually scores.
No.
Blimey. Right, Kojo, Crystal Palace ended Arsenal's winning streak with a 2-2 draw thanks to 2 Milivojevic penalty. See, I got his name right. There you go. I don't know why I used to call him back in. Anyway. Although there was quite a bit of controversy in this one. Arsenal's second goal looked to have been assisted by Lacazette's hand, while Zaha has been accused of diving again for Palace's second. What's your take on both incidents?
First one, Lacazette basically gave the boy a high five. So that shouldn't have been a goal. Second of all, the penalty. See, for me, I told people I don't think it's a penalty. I think he's. But again, it's one of those stupid, leave my leg out, lazy sort of challenges. And then he's seen your leg. He's like, well, I'm gonna go into it. But he sort of jumped into it because he jumps into your leg. He's simulating. It's a dive. But again, you're an idiot for leaving your foul like that, and that's what you deserve. So yeah, one was a high five, one was a dive. Referee had a great game. So should have been 1-1, but there you go.
Well, see, this is the thing. This is what you get when you play Xhaka at left back. I know he had a decent game midweek against. Was it Sporting? He played. Was it left back against Sporting?
He played left back.
Yeah. Right. But you got Lichtsteiner there. Play him at left back. He's a much more experienced player. And I know Zaha would have loved it, but let's be honest, you don't have to be an intelligent... you don't have to be a quick defender to play against Zaha. Just be intelligent and use your experience. And I think Lichtsteiner would have been the perfect player to play at left back. But yeah, a bit of a bizarre game, that one. You know, obviously Palace going in 1-0 up at half-time after Arsenal just completely dominating them when it comes to possession-wise. But that man, Aubameyang, I've got him on my dream team because I thought we'd smash the granny out of the Premier League, and he's not done too bad. What do you make of him, Connor?
I can't believe he's not getting as many starts as he should be. I understand he's doing it off the bench, but Lacazette is a quality striker, and I understand that they have to play both of them. But you know, for me, he's going to get 20 goals this season. Isn't he? He's on what, 7 already.
Yeah. Yeah,
he played 59 minutes of football and got 4 goals.
Mm-hmm.
But well, I don't know. There's probably more to it. I mean, Emery knows his stuff, doesn't he? But one of the best strikers in the league, I think. I think he's not getting as much credit as he probably deserves. But there's obviously underlying issues as to why he's not playing a full 90 minutes.
Mm. Well, Connor, Chelsea blitzed Burnley 4-0 on Sunday. How surprised are you to see Burnley struggle so much, given how well they did last season?
Well, actually, we did a preview show before the season began, and I put Burnley in my 3 to go down. And that was purely because of the European ventures. I thought they'd last longer in there, and that would have they've got like a squad of about 13 players, haven't they? And I thought that'd be their downfall, but that kind of fizzled out quickly. But so they've just been awful, haven't they? I mean, they conceded 39 goals all of last season, but 10 games in, they've conceded 21. I mean, their game is based on being hard to beat and keeping teams out and nicking the 1-0. But if you you're conceding two goals a game, you're not going to win 1-0, are you? No. So you're in trouble.
True, fair point. Well, gentlemen, Paddy Power and Skybet have Sean Dyche at 33-1 to be the next manager sacked, which are the same odds that apply to Pochettino. Is Dyche unsackable? In fact, are there any other managers who are actually Teflon?
Rafa, yeah. But I think Rafa will walk. I don't think he'll... I don't think Rafa will be sacked. I think he'll walk. But
yeah, but he will. Will he? Hang on. Sorry. Won't he be sacked because he's on a ridiculous amount of money, or you know, Mike Ashley doesn't want to pay out? Mind you, unless you're Alan Pardew, he'll give you a 7-year contract and then pay whatever you want.
Mike Ashley is trying to buy every shop there, isn't he? He's not even concentrating on that one.
Well, he should bring back Toys R Us and then at least have a decent striker like Jeffrey will do. That long neck of his. I mean, you know, they don't have anyone to target. So, you know, they don't have Mitrovic anymore, and Rondon isn't good in the air. So I think Jeffrey will go now.
That's actually a good point. What the hell is Rondon doing?
I know he's been injured for a few weeks, but even when he came on against us the other day and was a donkey.
Well, his name sounds like Rondo's, doesn't it? Which is that training routine. So I guess that's one of the reasons why he's playing. I don't know. So are there any managers that can't be sacked? I mean, let's forget Guardiola and Klopp for a moment because we know they're not going to be booted anytime soon. But anyone there that you can think that
yet? David Wagner.
Ah, that's a good show.
That's a good one, Connor, because Wagner, even when they were in the championship, Wolfsburg wanted him and they did all they could to keep him on. So, yeah, as you said, even if they go down, they won't sack him.
No, yeah, he's got freedom at Huddersfield for the rest of his life, isn't he? There's absolutely no chance.
What about Colin? Is Colin safe at Cardiff?
No.
When I say Colin, does anyone know why I call him Colin?
No, I was about to ask that. Why?
The anagram, isn't it?
It's the anagram. So basically, Neil Warnock, an anagram of his name is Colin Wanker.
Oh my God.
And everyone is going to get a pen and pencil out now and start like a word search, you know.
Right. I think he's sackable, but purely because he's an absolute psycho and he's going to melt down at Christmas, isn't he? He's just going to lose his mind.
I just think he's having the time of his life in this league, actually, because he hasn't been in the Premier League for a long time.
And he's There's had a reason for that.
Exactly, but he's had to watch all the... it's because... We talk about the English class of the old-timers that keep getting their jobs in the Premier League, but he wasn't part of that squad. And now he's back in the Premier League, and he's just like, hey, you know, I remember they lost the game, they got spun, I can't remember who it was. And this guy walked onto the middle of the pitch, smiling on his face, capping all the fans. I was thinking, yeah, you're just here to enjoy the moment. This is it for you. You're back in the Premier League. You can tell your children that you manage in the Premier League. And then tell your grandchildren as well. Like you are really living in the moment. I just think he's having a good time, man.
I actually think he wants to get sacked for most of his jobs because he's probably the richest man ever off severance payments, isn't he?
Oh, yeah.
Because he gets good contracts because he's got a good reputation. He gets good money. And then he calls someone a tosspot, gets sacked, and that's it. He's 3 million richer, isn't he?
Well, he was part of that QPR team. He was a head coach, wasn't he? They signed 25 players in 2 years. I think Mark Hughes was a manager as well after Colin. So I think he's got something to do with it. But let's be honest, I think Neil Warnock has kind of been ruined by Adol Taarabt, hasn't he? Best mates.
Yeah. Oh, what a guy.
Adol, you're not allowed to defend. Just stand in the opponent's half. That's all he asked him to do. So,
yeah. He was one of the most overrated footballers I've ever seen, honestly.
Yeah. And ended up at AC Milan and Benfica, so I don't know what that says about their recruitment policies. But then again, Milan had, what's his name? The midfielder that used to play for Portsmouth. What's his name? They called him the wardrobe because you couldn't pick him up. What's his name? Boupa Diop. No,
Boupa Diop.
Was it Milan? Was it Boupa Diop at Milan or was it someone else?
No, Boupa Diop went to
Suleimantari, sorry.
Suleimantari.
He was at Portsmouth, wasn't he? He was at Portsmouth, yeah.
He played for both Milan clubs, Montari.
Bloody hell.
Yep.
Suleimantari, one of the few central midfielders that played for both Milan clubs, up there with Pirlo and Seedorf.
Listen, to give Montari's credit, he scored two bangers against Villa.
Aye. Yannickis. Oh, no. Yeah. Who did he not make? Gareth Barrier, and he packed it 30
yards. Outside in the foot, top corner. Hey, listen.
I'm just going to rate him because he's got an in and he's one of my people. So.
Do you think Pompey's midfield at one point was Sully Montari and Kevin Prince Boateng?
Oh, but we don't like Boateng because he decided to be German for so long and then didn't get to the Germany team, so I thought, hey, why not? I'll go.
But he was really good for us, though, Mike, because he gave us a bit of creativity and that, I mean.
Montari actually played for Al Ittihad, which is a team in Saudi Arabia. Do you want to guess who is in charge of them at the moment? Who's their head coach?
Oh, he just joined recently.
Sven.
Harry Redknapp?
No. Give me a clue.
You're close with Harry Redknapp because he did manage the same team as Harry Redknapp once.
Villas-Boas?
Hmm?
Villas-Boas?
No.
Ooh.
Wendy Ramos?
No. You're thinking of Spurs. Think further back.
Further back?
One of Harry Redknapp's first clubs. Well, one of them, anyway. His first club was Bournemouth. He wasn't linked with Bournemouth. Think of another club that Harry Redknapp coached early on in his career.
West Ham?
Yes, go on.
Oh.
I know this because I heard this the other day. And as soon as you tell me, I'm going to go, oh, yeah. Oh, Slaven Bilic.
There you go. Slaven Bilic is in charge of this.
Oh.
There you go, see?
Oh, wow, what a drop that is. Yeah. Wasn't he linked with the Croatia job at one point in his life?
He was Croatia manager, wasn't he? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, boy.
He had the job, yeah. There you go, see? You learn something new every day. Well, you learn something new on this show, anyway. I don't know why the Periscope feed dropped, so I've just rebooted it. There you go. Technical problems, whatever. I think you can do an hour. There's the limit. So we've gone an hour. Anyway, whatever. Right, in other news, Barcelona won the first El Clásico of the season in style, pumping rivals Real Madrid 5-1. Luis Suarez.
Luis Suarez
was the hero as he bagged the hat-trick, the biting man. Yannickis, we knew Barcelona would win this even without Messi. I dread to think what the scoreline would have been had Messi been fit enough to start. Real Madrid were shambolic again, weren't they?
Oh, it's just they've been like that since the appointment of Lopetegui. I tweeted today that Real Madrid went and done a David Moyes what United did. They've hired a guy who has won nothing in his managerial career to go and manage a club of that stature with the players who are world champions, Champions League champions, and won La Liga. And it just hasn't worked. I mean, as for Lopetegui, I kind of feel sorry for him, to be honest. He's had probably the three worst months of his life.
Why do you feel sorry for him?
Sorry?
Why do you feel sorry for him?
Well, the eve of the World Cup, he gets sacked.
You stop right there. Stop doing this whole, victim card, okay? He didn't... No one put a gun to his head to take the Real Madrid job. He wanted it. He could have waited until after the World Cup, but he chose to do it before. Why? Because he's a narcissist. That's why. He's a narcissist, okay?
Him being the Spanish national coach and then joining Real Madrid in the summer, what effect does that have? He's there to manage his country, to the World Cup. It's got nothing to do with Real Madrid.
Hang about. Slow down for a second, right? He could have signed that contract and then taken on the Real Madrid job. If he was the man that they wanted, he could have waited till after, couldn't he?
Well, Louis van Gaal got the Man United job.
Stop it. Now you're being silly. You're being silly. No, you're being facetious. I'm not having this, right? He took the Real Madrid job while he was Spain's national team manager and they rightly sacked him, which they should have done in the first place, right? He took the Real Madrid job thinking that he was bigger than what he was. Let's be honest. Who's he managed before? Vallecano? Porto? Give me a break, right? So he's taken the job. He's bitten off more than he can chew, right? The players don't respect him because he's won nothing, like David Moyes, right? He's taken a team that's won the Champions League 3 years on the bounce, and he's failed. And they got absolutely ripped apart at the weekend, and serves him bloody right. Don't care.
He got ripped apart by Levante.
But there you go. Well, let's talk about Barcelona, Mr. Birthday Boy, again. I don't think Suarez has many fans outside Uruguay and Liverpool, although he's cleaned up his act since moving to Spain. It's probably those anger management classes he's been taking, which is true. He offers more than goals, doesn't he?
He's Luis Suarez. He's a prick for the way that he left the club, but he's a quality footballer, man. His industry, his skill, timing of runs. He's just his work rate as well. Like some players have got outstanding ability, which obviously he has, but he works so hard for the team as well. He can make something out of nothing, and a great header yesterday. I didn't catch all the goals because I was out and about, but he's just a just a quality player. And as you said, for them to beat Madrid, and obviously they've got Lopetegui's act P45 on deck. Without Messi, if he was playing, it probably would have been about 8 or 9. But Coutinho doing his thing, you know, because Valverde, though obviously they won the league last season, people still rip into him about his brand of football, and sometimes he's not as expensive, but certain times, just like for instance when Scolari was in charge of Brazil in 2002, even when you try to be have more restraint to your play, because of the quality of some of the individuals out there, you can still make a difference and still produce some great attacking play and get over the line. And that is what obviously Suarez brings to that team, and that's why him and Messi work so well, because of his work rate opens it up, and you know, Messi in a one-on-one, no one's stopping him.
Absolutely. And Kojo, as expected, Lopetegui has been sent packing. He's got his P45. And former Chelsea boss Antonio Conte is apparently taking the hot seat. Now, if this is true, it's a bit of a strange appointment, given the Italian system doesn't really tie in with Real Madrid's traditional style of play or their philosophy or whatever snobbery or snobbish attitude they have towards a style. What do you reckon?
I don't think Madrid have a style. I think all they know is try and win. So by any means necessary, if Conte can come out here, they'll look at it and say, if Conte can come out here and do 3-5-2 like he did at Chelsea for that season and win or something, they'll be happy. I don't think they have a style of play. I think at this point, they're just hella desperate, because Madrid, for the first time in a long time, didn't sack their manager. Their manager got up and left. For the first time, they didn't look at a legend at their club and say, your time is up here, goodbye, and get rid of them, or just wait for them to retire and go away. The guy said, I'm out of here. So I think they're just very, very rattled right now. And they're just looking every which way. And they're like, oh, you know what? Hey, Conte's available. Why not? Like, this is going to give him the job, because he's one snuff. He's got the pedigree to him. But I think they're just at a stage where they're just looking at each other and just saying, you know, we just need to win something. We need to keep going. But there's this idea that Conte will come in and he can ruffle some feathers with the players. Madrid really isn't the place to do that. It's not, because if he tries to push the buttons of Sergio Ramos, for example, he's going to get a shock. Like, Madrid is not a pleasant club. It really isn't pleasant. And when someone has power, the manager's not one of them, because the manager has no power, it could turn up nasty for him. So, I mean, good luck to him if he does take the job, but yeah, I don't feel like they have some style of play. I think they just want to win by any means necessary. Madrid, like, Mourinho and Ancelotti are two very different managers, style of play, everything, and they went from one guy to the other. So I think they just want to win.
Well, see, this is the thing. You mentioned Ancelotti. He had a fantastic reign at Real Madrid, I believe, anyway, winning the Champions League. And I know, did he even win La Liga while he was out there? I can't even remember. But, you know, he went to Bayern Munich and he lost a dressing room. You see Ribery and Robben having their own training sessions behind his back. And when players lose the respect of the manager, or vice versa, when the manager loses the player's respect, that's it, it's game over. And I think that's what we've seen with Lopetegui even before he got the job. They looked at him and they're like, who is this guy? What have you won? What have you won?
I don't even know why he even got a job in the first place.
Because he used to play for them.
but if that's what we're doing here, then at some point we might as well give David Bellion a job at Man United. Like, this is... you know what I mean?
But this is what I said about United and Mourinho. When they got Mourinho, people were saying, oh, you know, his ideas are dead and whatnot, but he's a proven winner. You want proven winners, big names to take these big jobs because they know what it's all about. You know, someone mentioned Eddie Howe getting a big job. Well, Eddie Howe, what is his credentials different to David Moyes? He hasn't won anything. David Moyes has at least won a Division 2 title. Do you know what I mean? So,
I mean, the issue with that, I mean, the thing about football now is that I genuinely feel like we don't have much winners left. But I think that also goes hand in hand with the fact that a lot of the, I don't know how many uprising managers you can say are special, have that special something. They can say, yeah, they're going to win something. But unless you are given the platform to go and try to win something, you won't become a winner. But yeah, the mentality of a manager, I mean, the managers that we agree are some of the greatest. It wasn't just about how they won titles because they won Premier League titles and Champions League and all that. It's because they knew how to manage clubs and change things up. That adds to it. And a lot of managers, I feel, just don't know how to do that. I feel a lot of managers in today's game are just copycats. They just have to copy and try and adopt a style that another manager is doing without knowing how to do it, you know? And then when it doesn't work out, they'll be praised as they know they try something different. But really and truly, they were clueless. They had no idea what the hell they were doing.
Mm.
And, you know, Sarri, I'll use Sarri's example. Sarri's actually a good manager for me, but again, he hasn't won anything. And when he was at Napoli, he was 12 points clear of Juventus and he bowled it. Now he's got the Chelsea job. He has to try and win something again because, I'm not going to lie to you, if he doesn't win anything within his Chelsea time, I'm going to come for his neck. Because he'll fall into that category of managers that haven't done anything without... They get praised, but they're not doing anything new or creating something. And that stinks of a lot of managers. That's why you have very few managers that know how to win left in the game.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what?
Still, can I share something I've read today?
Go on.
Very quickly. Lopetegui, 14 letters in his name, 14 official matches in charge of Real Madrid, 14 points in La Liga, 14 goals for in La Liga, 14 goals against in La Liga.
And hopefully be that the number of years we'll never hear his name ever again. Crikey. Double D will remember this. Remember when you used to go to HMV back in the day and you could buy what they call the mixed bag? So you pay like a couple of quid and there's a bag full of CDs. You just don't know what you're going to get inside of them. If you look at Real Madrid's managers since the turn of the century, right? Let's start with Del Bosque because he took charge in 99. He was there to 2003.
Legend.
Then you had Quiroz. Camacho, who also was Spain national team manager, Mariano Garcia Ramon, Vanderlei Luxemburgo, Jesus Christ.
Oh, yeah.
Juan Ramon Lopez Caro, who had 24 managers in charge, 24 games in charge. Then Capello, Bernd Schuster, Juan de Ramos, Pellegrini, Jose Mourinho, Ancelotti, Rafa Benitez, then Zidane, now Lopetegui, and Solari has obviously stepped in as a caretaker. I mean, you couldn't get a most random list of managers. You got an elite level in Mourinho, Ancelotti, Benitez, Zidane, and then you got a whole pile of crap, honestly. It's like having a you know, that mixed bag. You got Tupac's greatest albums and then Cleopatra. You know,
there you go.
Even Zidane wasn't proven.
True, but in the end of his tenure, he was.
He won three Champions Leagues. But what I'm saying, even that was a gamble initially because he never managed before.
That's true. But that's what I'm saying. They have to be given the platform to try and go and win. And he, from what I saw of him, he didn't try and copy any styles. He went out there and said, "This is what I do. This is what I want from the team." And that's what I want to do, and it worked. He earned their respect.
There's only one man now that can take over the Real Madrid job. That's Sam Allardyce. They need somebody.
There you go. Do you know the ironic thing, Yannick? Is I tweeted again what he said a couple years ago when he said that give me the Real Madrid or Barcelona Inter jobs and I'll win something every season. He's a clown, mate. Allardyce is a clown.
You know what, yeah. Those managers that you read out, like, it actually It didn't really dawn on me, but like, there's a reason why they didn't get out of the last 16 for at least, what was it, nine, 10 years?
That is trash.
Real trash. And then they signed players like Royce Drenthe and Fernando Gago.
Julian Falbert
alone.
Gago was a good player, to be fair. But yeah, some of the other ones were like,
I did not rate Gago for anything.
That was Kunstler as well.
Yep.
Oh, crikey. Wow. Karsian
Huntelaar. Yeah. Wow.
Well, they had Christoph Metzelda. They had, who was there?
Yeah.
Who did they have? Blimey. Saviola was there for a bit. And they signed some random players. Jersey Dudek. Yeah. Mamadou Diarra, that was at Fulham.
Wasn't Saviola a Barcelona reject?
He was?
Yes.
He was indeed. Yeah.
Oh, Madrid.
I tell you what, good at championship manager.
Oh, he was fantastic at championship manager.
Hey, Yannick's nose, you know. Saviola was the guy.
I grew up on championship manager.
My friend, and, if you want,
main manager as well.
If you want to talk about wage thieves, Lassana Diarra.
Ooh,
yes. They got
Lassana. Actually, he's actually the most professional wage thief because he's still doing that at PSG.
Yes,
he's elite. He's pure. He's with Adebayor. They're tied.
I mean, it's almost as if he's got the best agent in the world. He was at Real Madrid, then he was at Anzi Machicakala, which had endless amounts of money. Then he was at Al Jazeera. not the TV channel, but the team in the UAE.
Yeah.
He's at PSG. Moscow? What's that?
Was he at Spartak Moscow?
Locomotive,
Moscow?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at Portsmouth during the Harry Redknapp days. Whee!
And then he played for both Arsenal and Chelsea as well.
That's correct.
Yep. Wow, what a career.
Pretty immense. Elite, mate. Elite. He should be like a player of the century card on the FIFA Ultimate Team. Gotta be. Blimey. Let's move on then. Let's move on to Ligue 1 and their own Clasico, which quite literally sent me to sleep. Paris Saint-Germain, who were without Kylian Mbappe, dropped to the bench for being late to Tuchel's team meeting. Or you don't want to do that. Blimey. Yeah. They scraped a 2-0 win at deadly rivals Marseille. One of their goal scorers, Kylian Mbappe. Now, Jan, it was one of the worst games I've seen in a while, apart from tonight's game. Although I can see why Ligue 1 fans believe Paris Saint-Germain get preferential treatment from officials, given the pathetic decision to award PSG a free kick when Marquinhos literally ran into Strootman, who was probably looking at some bird in the crowd. What do you make of that?
Well, you kind of hit the nail on the head, mate. In France, you know who's going to win the league before it's even started. You know, the influence of the Arab money maybe has got something to do with the refs giving them all the decisions. Forget the game on Sunday. For PSG now, it's all about progressing in the Champions League, really. Like I said, the league's done and dusted. The cup, they'll probably win that as well. But of cups, you know, what they've invested now is to go further in the Champions League. And to be honest, from what I've seen of them this season, even in the Champions League, they haven't even looked impressive, to be fair. Napoli played well. Liverpool played well against them. So, you know, even there, they've got work to do.
Absolutely. And Connor, the SPL gets a lot of stick for being a one-team league, but surely the same should be levelled at Ligue 1. Paris Saint-Germain are already 8 points clear and they're only 11 games in.
Yeah, I mean, there's just, as Yannick just alluded to, there's no chance of any team competing anymore, is there? Much like the Premier League where Leicester won it and the other teams went, we're not letting that happen again. I think Monaco won it and PSG were like, this can never happen again. Let's absolutely blitz it. And that's what's happening. I mean, to compare Ligue 1 to the SPL is a bit harsh because the SPL is absolutely tripe. I still think Celtic would finish probably bottom five of the Ligue 1, to be honest. But it's not entertaining, is it? But I genuinely think that's why PSG will never do anything in the Champions League, because they're only playing at, 60, 70% every week? Then they've got to come and play at 100% against your big boys in Europe.
That's true. And the one thing I've noticed about tonight's show is that there's a music theme to it. I mean, we had Jordan Pickford with his Chumbawamba. We've got Romelu Lukaku, who seems to be part of, I don't know, he's taken Nas's ether since joining Jay-Z's label.
Rock Nation, baby.
There you go. And now you've got kind of Real Madrid, where they were like DJ Khaled, all I do is win, and now they've gone from Beck to loser. And I think the same you can say about Thierry Henry, because meanwhile in the Principality, Mr. TH14 is still waiting for his first win as Monaco boss, following his side's 2-2 draw against Dijon, and I think they're only famous for mustard, really. I don't think Thierry can cut the mustard at the moment. Another one. I've got these all night. Right, Connor, I know it's early days, mate, but two draws and a loss isn't the best starts for Henry. So far, it looks like Aston Villa have dodged a bullet. Monaco are 19th in the league. Level on points with bottom place Gangong. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Yeah, it is. Well played.
Dankeschön, that's German, isn't it?
Merci.
There you go. GCSEs. Yeah, lovely. It's not easy, this management lark, is it?
No, it's probably a hard job to walk into, to be fair to them. They did have a good squad, but what they've got left of it is probably bereft of any confidence. They've got some quality players. You've got Tielemans and Golovin, who are kind of German upcoming. They'll need time. They're still raw. But like we talk about the quality of Liga, and they can still go on a run. They can still finish second if they really wanted to. But Henry's, you know, stayed a few games in. He's still cutting his teeth. It's different being a number one to being a coach or assistant, especially from international football, isn't it? But then, you know, everyone in England is praising Gerrard and Lampard, but how quick can a manager's career be completely destroyed? We talked about Lopetegui earlier. Take a 3 months for him to be the next big thing to an absolute nobody, and it can go the other way, can't it? So we'll have to wait and see, but not great stuff.
They've got Nasser Chadli. Sure, they must be doing better. Come on.
Jovic as well, with Falcao up front.
True.
There you go. They have got a lot of injuries at the moment, Monaco, yeah. But this is just unacceptable. It's sad what happened to them. They won the league, and literally that whole 11 that won the league has literally all been sold.
Yeah.
I'm at the door, I'm leaving. Gents, which world class footballer do you think is the biggest managerial flop artist?
What do you mean?
Well, I mean, you got Thierry Henry going to Monaco. He was a world-class footballer, but Dross is a manager so far. You've had...
Do you mean ever?
Yeah, as far as you can remember, anyway.
Roy Keane?
Oh, God.
Bingo!
Oh, wow.
Bingo!
My dad did it with the first shot, you know. The first shot, done the thing, but Roy Keane, you know. Oh, my days. That guy, you know.
I mean, he won the league at Sunderland, but he didn't do anything after that, did he, really, to be fair?
Well, he did drop kick the A-board when he did a team talk for Ipswich. We've been doing that. Surely there's got to be some other, you know. I remember Frank Rijkaard, he got the Barcelona job, won the Champions League. I don't remember Van Basten doing too well as a head coach.
There's one club who kind of stood out when I read this question, and that's AC Milan. Because you think of the managers they've had in the last few years. They've had Seedorf, Inzaghi, Gattuso.
Yep.
Gattuso's done all right, but the players they've got should be doing a lot better. Yeah, you know. I mean, Seedorf and Inzaghi especially were absolutely phenomenal footballers.
Yeah.
And couldn't win a game to save them lives as a manager. Seedorf's a manager somewhere else now, isn't he? In China, I believe.
No, yeah. Seedorf has gone...
Brazil?
Uzbekistan or somewhere like that.
Oh, yeah, he's gone international, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, wow. He's gone somewhere else. He was in China and then he left.
He's Cameroon, that's where he is.
He got relegated with Deportivo La Coruña.
Yeah, the Deportivo, yeah, they were. Yeah.
No, I've got it. Tony Adams.
What, on the same level? Yeah, true, could be. Well, what about Rudy Völler? He was dreadful, wasn't he?
Yeah. He was trash.
Klinsmann wasn't great.
But Tony Adams.
Mark Hughes as well.
Tony Adams dances on the training ground, so I mean.
Oh, no, still, it's got to be Gary Neville, isn't it, at Valencia?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, but
wow.
He wasn't world class, was he?
I think he was, as a right back.
Come on now, I think you're being a bit... What about Alan Shearer? He got Newcastle relegated, didn't he?
No, he did well there to get him relegated.
For crying out loud, mate. Come on, who else have we got? Did Eusebio, was he ever a manager?
Eusebio, I don't remember him managing.
You could probably chuck Maradona in it, couldn't you?
Oh, yeah, yes. Maradona's been awful. Maradona's in Mexico now in the second division.
Yeah, he's we did this the other week, man. He's the same place as where what's it called? The drug dealer. What's his name? I forget his name now. It's gone out of my head.
Well, the team's Dorados. Well, I don't know the drug dealer. I don't know.
No, the drug dealer in Mexico.
Javier Marquez.
No. Allegedly. No, the guy they did a series on him. Oh, I forgot his bloody name now. It doesn't matter now. Doesn't matter. The Sinaloa, what are they called? Oh, for crying out loud. It doesn't matter. I'm losing my trailer full. It's 11:30. I'm getting tired. I'm getting tired. Anyway. Right, that's it for our show, ladies and gents. Thank you for tuning in. We've gone almost an hour and a half. It's been great having you guys all on.
Hold on. What about the quiz?
Oh, yes. Thank you. See, your man flu is transferring over to me now, isn't it?
On the ball, because he stopped thinking about Lukaku, so he's quite sharp on it. Yeah.
I know Lukaku's definitely not one of the scorers in the quiz.
Okay. Right, let's do this. Man United 1, Chelsea 1. So, the goal scorers for Manchester United. Come on, Kojo.
Van Persie.
Persie? Last minute. Is that what you're going with, yeah?
Yeah, RVP.
And for Chelsea?
Drogba.
Okay. Jan?
Yeah, Drogba header from a corner.
Okay, well, since you guys are so sure of it, I think the other two are going to agree with you. Connor?
I did put RVP and Terry, but obviously it's Drogba.
I didn't have either of those players because I didn't remember the game, so we'll keep it a zero for me.
Well, it's ironic because Drogba wasn't supposed to play, but Costa got injured and Drogba played and he scored.
Yeah, I had Costa. I had Smalling and Costa because I don't remember the game. I know when I see the goals, I'm going to be like, oh yeah, I remember that.
Okay, well, I'm writing that one off then, so I'm going to have to give the bonus question, aren't I? For Christ's sake. Right, West Ham 2, Man City 1.
I only remember one score because I used to love his name.
Go on.
Amalfitano.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Well, that's what I remember. City, I'll say Aguero. It was 2-1 West Ham.
Yeah, that's right.
Who did they have back in that time? They were poor.
They had
Andy Carroll. They had.
That's who I had. Sacco and Carroll. I did.
Sacco.
I don't remember.
I'm going with Sacco.
I had the Efra Sacco.
Moses and Carroll.
The fake hammer. Efra Sacco. I'm going for Sacco.
I've got Moses, Carroll, and De Bruyne.
Okay, Moses, Carroll. Moses, was he there?
Yeah, Moses was with him. Yeah.
Oh, bloody hell, Jan.
You guys are not going to believe me, but I watched this game with my cousin. He's a West Ham fan. David Silva killed it for City that day. And the second was... I think it was Sacco or Salvio. It was one of the two. I'm going to go for Sacco.
Okay, right. This could be an interesting one. Spurs 1, Newcastle 2.
Oh, God.
Jan, did you go there with your cousin?
I'm going to go with Lorik Remy from Newcastle.
Okay.
Oi. Oi.
He had the sniffles for a while in Newcastle. I remember that.
Oi.
2-1 for Tottenham. I'm going to go with 2014.
Come on, it's 11:30, man. Hurry up.
I'm going to go with Harry Kane.
And who else scored for Newcastle?
I'm going to go with Remy too.
Okay, right. Remy Martin. Okay, who's next? Kojo?
2014, they had Bobby Soldado. Wow, crap. They had Gareth Bale. They had Adebayor. Okay, I'll go with Uncle Adebayor.
Okay.
And then Newcastle, just because I thought they were both as bad as each other. I don't know which one's worse. You can tell me. I'll go for one of the Amiobi brothers.
Okay.
And Papi Cisse, I can't remember if he was there that year or not.
Jeez!
Yeah, okay. Probably.
I'm going to go, I can't remember. I'm going to go for Tottenham, I'm going to go Ericsson. Newcastle, I'm going to go Musa, Sissoko, and Remy.
Okay. Connor?
I know one of the Newcastle scorers is Perez. I'm 99% sure Perez got his first goal in that game. And I'm going to go Moussa Sissoko and Nasir Chadli.
Oh, very good. Very good. Right. I'm going to give you the bonus one here. Okay? Yes.
Okay.
Burnley 1, Everton 3. Who wants
to... Was this in 14-15?
Yep.
Burnley were here.
Samuel Eto'o hat-trick for Everton.
Is that what you're going with, yeah?
Yeah.
Who hat-trick?
Eto'o. I think
Eto'o.
He
had
two or three.
In the was Eto'o there? Yeah, he was, bro. He only spent 1 year, but
well, number five,
yeah,
didn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
was this Burnley's first season?
Back up, yeah, because I remember the first game of that season they played really good against Chelsea, and then Fabregas turned it on.
Just trying to think who played for Burnley back then. Jesus Christ.
All right, if it was Burnley's first season, the only person that he scored for them was Danny Ings, so it has to be him.
Scott Arfield.
Balance of probability.
2014, what? I'll go...
Was Robbie Blake there?
Listen, just answer the bloody question. Don't ask me the questions.
Right, you know what? I'm going to go for Lukaku.
Lukaku and?
And someone said Eto'o definitely scored, so I'll say Eto'o for the other two. I'm going to steal that one.
Okay, and for Burnley?
Ings, because I swear he was the only one that scored for them before he got sold.
Fair enough. Jan, you didn't choose your Burnley goal scorer.
I'm gonna go Blake just because I said him. I don't want
to yeah. Blake.
Didn't Blake score a volley against Man United?
Yeah, yes. They beat us 1-0. Carrot missed the penalty.
Oh yeah, damn, that was a bad day.
That famous kit. Anyway. Double E?
Burnley, I'm gonna go, I don't know, Chris Eagles.
Oh wow, okay.
What a throwback.
And Everton's goal scorers?
Everton, I'm going to go Lekaka, Eto'o, and Baines.
Baines, okay. Penalty, right? Connor?
Burnley, I'm going to go Chalobah.
Wow.
Ooh.
And I know Eto'o definitely got two, so I'll go Eto'o 2 and Baines with the other one.
Okay. Right, I'm going to total these up now. So, I'm going to write off the United one because that just seemed too easy for the United supporters. Right, West Ham 2, Man City 1. The goal scorers for West Ham were Amafitano and Sacco. And Man City's goal scorer was David Silva. Double E got 1, Kojo got 2, Connor got 0, and Jan got 3. Okay, remember your score so far because I'm going to forget them. Okay. Spurs 1, Newcastle 2. Goal scorer for Spurs was Adebayor, and Newcastle goal scorers were Sami Amiobi and Ayoze Perez. So ooh, Jan got none, Kojo well got done, 2, Double D, you got none, and Connor got 1. There you go.
Woo.
There you go. Right. What are your score so far? Because I don't even bloody know.
Kojo's winning. I'm on 4.
There you go. Right. Burnley 1, Everton 3. The goal scorer for Burnley was Danny Ings. Who else?
Well,
so I think most of you got that one. And Everton's goal scorer is 2 for Samuel Eto'o and 1 for Romelu Lukaku.
Yo! Clean house. Okay.
There you go. So Kojo wins it this week.
Get in there.
You're lucky Rodri Giggs wasn't here because you'd have beaten him by 6. So yeah, that concludes our show, ladies and gents. We've done an hour and a half. All of us are burnt out at the moment. I think only Double D's the only one working off adrenaline at the moment. There you go. Right, let's do our shout outs. Jan, what's your Twitter handle?
I don't like Lukaku.
Lovely. You can't, that's a lie, because you can't have that one. That's already been taken by Lukaku's brother, so yeah.
Oh wow.
Plays for Lazio, I think.
Yannick is J.
Double D.
at Double D, that's D U B U L D Double E, but the show's handle is at @DDFootyFactory_.
And where can we listen to your very lovely voice? I was going to say dulcet tones, but that's not fair.
Goodness me. On Top FM, 95.5 FM in London. Outside London, probably best to pick it up on the TuneIn app. And that's a Saturday morning at 10 a.m.
There you go. South London, nosebleed territory for me. Right. Kojo.
Yes.
Mr. BBC.
Yeah, you can find me personally on Twitter as Coach Kojo. And yeah, you can find me on BBC, so I'm going to start using that actually. Free Midfield's Twitter handle is Free Midfield. You can find us on iTunes, SoundCloud, and what's the other one? FNX Network. And Footy Says. Shout out Footy Says as well. You can find him on YouTube, Footy Says. Twitter, Footy_Says.
Excellent. Okay. Mr. Connor.
Yeah, I'm at Connor Dunford 1 on my personal, and then the Playmakers is _PlaymakersFC. And yeah, we're on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, YouTube, fucking everywhere really.
There you go. We're on Twitter at Shoot Defence. We're also on the FNX Network, same as Three Midfield, same as Footy Says, same as Playmakers, same as One Up Front, same as Sofa Sports News, same as the Football Fans Podcast. Yep. And that's it for us this week. Thank you ever so much, everyone, for joining me. It's been an absolute pleasure having you all on. We'll be back at some point very soon, I hope. So until next time, guys, take care. Adios. Bye.